This is Paul Jędrzejczak for Sunday Morning Town Square, and I'm joined in studio by former Grand Rapids Mayor John Logie. He served as mayor from 1992 to 2003. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, thank you.
Glad to have you on.
Well, it's a pleasure.
So you're a successful lawyer. What made you decide to run for mayor?
Well, I'd been active in politics, helping other people get elected to various local, state, and federal offices. And my predecessor, Jerry Helmholtz, made an announcement in November of 1990 that he would not seek a third term.
Okay.
And I had two clients and a third friend of mine all show up at my office at Warner Norcross and suggested, because I had chaired four commissions for the city and that I'd been lead counsel in suing the United States of America because the city thought they'd gotten gypped out of a federal project fund.
Okay.
And we settled that case for $5.5 million back in the 1970s,
sure,
which helped build out the Grand Center at that time. And they said, you know, this is really your opportunity to an open seat. You live in the city in the second ward. And I went home and talked to Susie, like any happily married man. And she said, yeah, I think you'd do a good job at that. And I ended up having to talk to my law firm to make sure that was okay with them. But we solved that problem.
Okay.
So I threw my hat in the ring. There turned out to be five of us running for the job, including a city commissioner who was in the alternate cycle from my cycle.
Okay.
Sharon Wurst. And she could run for mayor as a veteran commissioner without having to give up her seat. And she did. And so there were five of us running, and I ended up on top.
Okay, okay. Now, the city's gone through some pretty interesting changes in the last 40 years. It's a time I remember back when I was a kid, you know, the 70s, early 80s. My sister used to take me downtown. You had a lot of buildings boarded up, and the city's had kind of a lot of false starts, it seemed. And so if you kind of go back to, you know, when you came into office around 92, what was going on? I mean, we didn't have the arena. We didn't have a robust downtown as we do with restaurants, bars, and nightclubs. Take us back and paint us a picture of what the time was like back then.
Well, I want to go a little deeper into my system, because I grew up in this town in the 40s and 50s, where all of the main retail was in three department stores in the heart of downtown. Herbolshire and Wurzburg's and Steckity's were all vibrant, multi-story creatures. So when I was first running in the spring of 1991, I took a little pad and a pencil, and I started up at the Civil War Monument at Fulton and what we now call Monroe Center.
Right.
And I walked the four blocks down to where the Arthur Vandenberg statue now is at the bottom of those four blocks, counting vacant storefronts.
How many were there?
76 vacant
wow.
storefronts, including the huge Herbolshire building, which was sitting there cold iron. And they weren't the only problem, because these buildings were all built in the late 1890s to 1920s, and they were four and five and six stories tall. And the only occupants in the upper floors of these vacant buildings on the streetscape were pigeons. And I decided then and there, if the people gave me a chance to be their mayor, we're going to have to fix that. And the fix, of course, is that we tore up the whole street, put in all new subsurface infrastructure and electronic wiring, anticipating high-tech use.
That was around 97, 98.
In that area. Actually, a little earlier than that. And put the snow melt system into the sidewalk and everything else.
Okay.
And then step back to see if we could get it developed. And some other things that happened was a group that I founded called the Urban Core Mayors, older 12 cities in southern Michigan. We got three pieces of legislation passed in the middle 1990s to help cities. One of them was to let us reuse core city industrial sites that were contaminated by finding out that we could sit on them and do something new without becoming fully liable for the cleanup.
Right.
The second one was the Renaissance Zone legislation. And, for example, the People's Building that sits right on the corner of Monroe Center in Ionia, 18-story brown brick building. That's what I call a layer cake. It has commercial on the first floor, a bank, select bank. It has two or three floors of commercial. And then it has 14 floors of condos.
Sure.
And those buildings have all filled back up. And the last time I walked down there, there were four vacancies, and they're turning over in fairly good style. So it was that kind of decision that my city commission agreed with me to do. Mm-hmm. You know, in our form of governance, I sit and preside at the 7-member meeting, but I just have one vote in 7, and I had to convince at least 3 people or more to agree that this was good policy or a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I understood from Jane Jacobs, who authored The Death and Life of Great American Cities 50 years ago, and her mantra was, if you're going to have a healthy downtown, you got to have people living there.
Right.
So in about 95, at my State of the City address to the downtown Rotarians, which I used as my platform for the 11 State of the City addresses I gave, I suggested that we have 5,000 more residential units in downtown by 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And we almost made it. We were mm-hmm. over 4,000 when 2005. Now we're well over it.
Right.
And that was part of this plan of building layer cakes where the upper part of these buildings would become residences.
Okay.
And one of the first ones was down on Ionia south of Fulton. And it had a...
Was that Tannery Row?
Yeah.
Sam Cummings' project. Mm-hmm.
And he put retail on the main floor
mm-hmm.
and then put apartments all up above it.
Yeah.
And it was so successful that the tenants came to him and said, we want to own it.
Right.
So we helped them condoize it. And things like that began. And there were other companies. Peter Secchia, when he came back from being the ambassador to Italy,
mm-hmm.
I said, Peter, I need some help on a project. We've got to renovate some of these buildings downtown. So he partnered with a local construction company here, and they started everything that we were talking about in spades all around downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And so pretty soon people got the idea that this was going to be a savvy place to be.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I never thought up the idea of the arena.
Okay.
It had been lying around here for years. And, of course, our existing arena at that point was the Welch, or actually originally Civic Auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
And the facade of that still stands.
In fact, right.
As part of DeVos Place, we decided that we'd keep that and so keep a connection to the past there.
Yeah,
the whole
it's a beautiful entryway.
Well, that seated 3,400 people for sports or entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
If they were going to be very friendly to each other, squished in.
Right, right.
Now, of course, the Van Andel Arena sits 11,000 for sports and 12,500 mm-hmm. for entertainment. And it's, you know, we floated a $55 million bond issue, which was enough to build that building that size, but with a lot of precast concrete.
Right.
And a lot of probably bench seating like the Michigan Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
A group called the Grand Action, led by David Fry mm-hmm. and John Canepa
mm-hmm.
and Dick DeVos, gave the city another $22 million to make it a world-class facility. So mm-hmm. off went the bad stuff and on went glass.
Mm-hmm.
And on went, we could go to Irwin Seating and American Seating, the two biggest manufacturers of stadium seating in the country at that time, and manufacturing here, not overseas,
mm-hmm.
and say, give us your Class A best bid for mm-hmm. these seats. And they both did, and they were so close, I made them both mad. I said, you get half and you get half, but you got to harmonize your design.
Okay.
And so that really put that on the map.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it was funded, it has been turning over $1 million profit every year.
Okay.
And that put us as the number one entity in the 10 to 15,000 size range
mm-hmm.
in North America, including Canada.
Yeah.
For 6 of the last 8 years that I was in office.
Okay.
Filling seats.
Yeah,
that wasn't
fantastic.
A beauty contest. It was based on filling seats. And
sure.
We weren't the biggest. We were
sure.
We were competing against full 15,000 seat stadium.
Right.
And we're beating them.
Well, you got a lot of artists who are coming to town who you normally...
Well, you see, we were sitting between Detroit and Chicago.
Right,
which
right.
And what that meant is that that's one of the reasons why we hired Rich McKeegan's company.
Mm-hmm.
out of Pennsylvania, because they were international in doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody's coming on tour, you know, they're planned in Detroit, they're planned in Chicago, whether they're going east to west, west
right.
to east. Here we are in the middle. They can stop in on a one-night stand, pick up a quick $250,000,
sure.
and we can make money.
Not too shabby.
And so it turned out to be a gold mine.
Right, right.
And again, the Grand Action Committee's involvement cannot be understated because...
Mm-hmm.
The idea of expanding the convention hall had also been around for a
right.
while. And the one that we built in the 70s, the one that I helped get them the last
Grand
piece
Center.
Of money for, was, you know, had maybe 80,000 square feet and only maybe 30 of it Class A.
Okay.
And the new building has 165,000 square feet of Class A space. And we can now compete with almost anybody except the 20,000 to 25,000 and up conventions that we just don't have the beds to compete. But short of that, which is about 98% of the convention business, we can go after.
Mm-hmm.
When the U.S. Green Conference, the last year I was mayor, 03, was planning, and they plan 3, 5, 7, 8, 9 years out, these big conventions.
Sure.
They put out an RFP to, I think, 35 or so of the top-level facilities, and they got down to 4. Denver, which is a very successful one, Phoenix, which is very successful, Silicon Valley, which is very successful, and Grand Rapids. And we lost out to Denver that year.
But okay.
We'll get them one of these years. That's the change over there. And again, it was the timing. That was a $215 million project. $45 million of it was from Grand Action.
Okay.
Again, put over as a handshake to make it a world-class facility.
Well, we always have a nice public-private work ethic
here. And we made good use of that in those good years that we were making those things happen.